is the mitzvah of hocheach tochiach es amisacha, the mitzvah of rebuke, or of protest. And the question is, when is rebuke appropriate, and when is it inappropriate? We mentioned last Thursday the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that children are punished for their parents' sins when they were able to rebuke and they neglected to do so. But if they were unable to rebuke, if it was a situation where they shouldn't have rebuked or they couldn't have rebuked, so then they're not held culpable. And people were expressed an interest in knowing when those situations were. When is it that a person is able or permitted to rebuke, and when is it when a person should not rebuke or cannot rebuke? And it was anyhow on the list of things to discuss, and so today is the answer to that question.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
One of the primary sources is Tolkisami ben Shenecha, he said to Tolkorami ben Enecha.
Not on this page.
I know.
Yeah. So this topic always intrigued me, especially since when I was young, hearing All for the Boss, the biography of Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman, which we read in sixth grade and which I reread later on. And the biography is full of circumstances where Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman gave tochacha to people who seemingly did not listen to him. The author, Rebbetzin Shane, the daughter of Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman, recounts how he was one time at a family wedding, and the dancing began, and it was mixed dancing, and he got up and he said, "Mixed dancing is usur," and the hosts asked him to leave the wedding. And she recounts another story where he walked up and down at the beach with placards saying that it's inappropriate for Bnos Yisrael to dress this way in public. And again, it seemed that nobody really heeded his calls. And she recounts, I believe, a third story where something was going on, either Chilul Shabbos or Chilul Yom HaKippurim, and he came in and he made a macha. I forget whether he distributed leaflets or whether he came into the shul on, you know, the day and said, "You can't do this." And again, seemingly with no effect. A fourth case that she quotes is that when he was already living in Yerushalayim and he encountered some inappropriately dressed women in one of the streets of Yerushalayim, and he said to them, "You can't dress this way. You're Jewish girls. You have to dress more modestly." And if it were a different author or different circumstances, you would expect and you would hope that these stories will be followed up with the postscript, 40 years later I met a woman and she had a hat on top of her shetel and she said to me, "Rebbetzin Shane, you don't know, but like I was one of those girls on the beach or one of, you know, the people at the wedding, and you know, your father made such an impression on me that I decided," but she doesn't bring down such stories. It could be that such stories happened. We hope that such things happened, but we don't know that they happened. And the question is,
we learned with Rabbi Savitsky not long ago about somebody goes with shatnez and you're allowed to rip it, but that's only if you are sure that you have it. But you know that it's overa vera, but when it says if you're not sure or if you know that the person is not going to hear to you, you shouldn't be.
So maybe this is going to be chazara.
That's why I'm surprised, Rabbi. Rabbi Herman didn't.
Embarrassment, wasn't it? Reason you can do that because of embarrassment.
You're allowed to embarrass somebody only with shatness. That's the only case that you're allowed to embarrass.
Okay, so I see that we're not gonna be all chazara. We'll have some new things also.
Okay.
So the question is, what exactly is it that went into Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman's equations? And I hope that will become clear by the end of this year. The starting point for a discussion of Hocheach Tochiach Es Amisacha, I believe, is the Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam. And the Rambam lists two distinct components of the mitzvah of giving rebuke. The first component, as you can see, I labeled it number one, Aleph, in the first source, And we'll just read the words that are in bold. The Rambam says, don't say that I am a tzaddik. I'm doing everything right. Ve'im yechta zulasi, and if someone besides for myself, if the other sins, mali, what's that to me? Dino im elokav, it's between him and God. A person shouldn't say that, says the Rambam. That's what the Torah is teaching us. Don't say, why do I care if the other sins? It's between him and God. Rather, no, it's something that I should care about. It's something that I should care about. The Rambam continues and says, Anachnu mitzuvim shelo namre velo nazov zulaseinu me'umaseinu sheyamre. Just like we should not do averos, we shouldn't abandon the other from our nation to do averos. And if he's trying to do averos, we have to give him tochacha, rebuke, and bring him back to stop him from doing the avera. So this is the most basic and the most classical definition of tochacha. The way that we understand it is lehashivo, to bring a person back, to withhold, withdraw his hand from the attempt to do an avera. And from this perspective, it would seem that if a person is confident that his rebuke will not get the person lehashivo, to withdraw his hand, to stop doing the avera, so then the rebuke would not be a fulfillment of the mitzvah per se. The mitzvah is to get the person to stop doing averos, and if a person fails to stop someone from doing an avera, so then he perhaps has not even fulfilled the mitzvah of rebuke. He certainly has not fulfilled the spirit of the mitzvah of tochacha.
Somebody that was a Tanok Nishba, and now that you rebook him, he knows he's amazing now. So that's also one of the considerations.
Yeah, okay, we'll get there. I see that some of this will be Chazara, some of this will be new. So we'll. I think that the answer is that your question shows an excellent amount of humility, because you're second-guessing your ability to know anything for certain, which is a very healthy thing to do. However, historically, and even nowadays, and brace yourself for this, there have been people who were 100% confident of their predictions of the future. Have you ever met such a person?
No.
He was said, for sure, this is what's going to happen.
Put his money where his mouth is. Put the stock.
I don't think I've ever met such a person.
Wow. And you're privileged to move amongst a very special circle of friends.
Maybe. I don't
know. It's El Chacham Aros
and all that. Maybe someone talks in shul, and you know, somebody already went to that guy and told him to stop talking, and he didn't stop talking. What makes me think that if I tell him to stop talking, he's going to listen to me?
But we'll get there momentarily. So basically, this is the first idea that the Rambam articulates, that the mitzvah of tochacha is directed towards getting a person to stop doing averos. However, the Rambam mentions a second element of tochacha as well. This is an element which is very, very important in these pre-Rosh Hashanah times. I'll tell you derech mashal, that there was once somebody who sort of... He hurt my wife's feelings a little bit. And my wife was very distraught about this for more than a week, I think.
Wow.
And I kept on telling her that it might be a good idea for you to mention to the person mention to the person, like, you did this, and, like, I really don't understand it, and it really is troubling me and bothering me and hurting me, and can you at least, you know, give me some clarity or explain your actions, and that way it could clear the air between the two of them. And that is the second component that the Rambam says exists within the mitzvah of Tochacha. He says, and here this is in the second paragraph, the lo nitar lo.
Very good that your wife expressed
herself
rather than holding it inside. What's the end of this?
Confidential.
Right.
Confidential.
Right.
In
private matter. You know?
And then make it your fault somehow. You're very lucky. Indeed. it'll come up in the appropriate year.
Yeah.
So the second component, the Rambam says, "V'lo nitar lo, v'nachshov lo avon." We shouldn't have nitira, lo sikom. We shouldn't take revenge, v'lo sitar, and we shouldn't hold in our heart. We shouldn't bear a grudge, livnei amecha, to those who are your fellow co-religionists. So the Rambam says that part of the mitzvah of Tochacha is to give a person the catharsis necessary to avoid nitira, to avoid holding a grudge. And this is a totally separate component of Tochacha. It's not something which is primarily aimed at getting the other person to apologize to you and thereby fulfill their mitzvah of teshuvah. It's in order to avoid yourself feeling netira. It's directed inwards rather than outwards. It's directed at the self rather than at the other. So the Rambam has these two different directions for mitzvahs tochacha. There's the other directed, the zulasi, the other person, and then there's also the self-directed, the lo nitar, the lo nechshov, lo avon, I should dispel my grudge by giving tochacha to the person who wronged me. The Rambam says a lot of other important things, but we're not going to read them right now. So I want to turn now to this list that I made in the next line and just go through it one by one, and hopefully we'll see how each of these models of Tochacha are reflected in the sources that we're going to read later. So the first model is for the sinner. That's the first paragraph of the Rambam. Zulasi, I'm doing giving Tochacha to prevent someone else from doing an Aveira. The second model is for the one giving rebuke. That's the second paragraph of the Rambam. I'm doing it in order to dispel the potential grudge that's being harbored in my own heart. But it's actually a little bit more than that, because that only applies when a person wronged me and I am giving them tochacha for the wrong that they did against me. But what happens if the person is doing something which is a bein adam lamakom? He's doing an avera which really is between him and God. He is being mechalal Shabbos b'tzina. He's eating treif. He's doing something maybe a little bit less serious. He's not, hanging up his mezuzah properly. Whatever it may be, it's not really any business of mine. At least in as much as I'm not being hurt by it, right? But being concerned about him, so I might want him to stop doing whatever he's doing. But he's not going to stop. So is there any reason that I should give him rebuke anyhow? It's not to get rid of the pain in my heart. It's not to stop him from doing the Aveira. So is there any other reason to give Tochacha? And the answer is, I believe, yes. Although I don't think anyone articulates it explicitly, it is implicit in a number of comments of Rishonim. And there's two different reasons why a person should give Tochacha, even if he himself is not hurt, and even if it won't accomplish preventing the person from doing the Aveira that he's attempting. The first reason is because a person should feel pain whenever somebody Jewish is doing an Aveira. It should be something that's painful to observe, that's painful to experience, and therefore any Aveira, even an Aveira being Adam Lamakum, a person who's not putting on tefillin, who's not hanging up a mezuzah, should cause me a little bit of pain, and I should need to express that pain by yelling, "How can you do this?" That's number one. Number two, we know that if a person sees something and he sort of shrugs it off, so then he becomes desensitized to that thing in the future. A person sees a lot of violence and he sort of shrugs, so that desensitizes the person to a certain extent to violence. It causes a bit of cognitive dissonance. If this is something bad, then I should react to it the way I react to things that are bad. If I'm reacting to it in a manner which is sort of parv, so then and obviously I'm not acting as if it's bad, which will make me think to a certain extent that it's not bad also. That's a principle that psychologists call cognitive dissonance, that if my actions don't reflect my ideology, so then ultimately I'm going to have a tension between my actions and my ideology, and one of them is going to have to give. Mm-hmm. That's also the principle that the Bali Musar call hachitzonios and me'oreres es hapnimios. Usually the Bali Musar use this principle to say that if you want to do something, you want to think, you want to believe, you want to be convinced of something good, you want to have a good emotion, so do an action. If you want to be happy, smile. The smiling will make you happy. But the same is true in the reverse. If a person sees something that is really what to make them really upset, and they act cool and calm about it, so that will take away from their distress over seeing such a thing. It's hachitzonios. The calm, cool exterior is me'oreres es hapnimios. It causes a person to think calmly and coolly about something that really ought to move them and excite them to distress. So the second purpose of tochacha, again, the inward directed purpose of tochacha, is the prevention of apathy. If I don't want to think apathetically about this, then I can't act apathetically about this as well. And finally, the third possibility, the third direction of tochacha, is for the audience. And I think this is part of what Rebbetzin Shane was writing in All for the Boss, that even if we don't know whether any of the attendees at the wedding or any of the partiers at the beach or any of the people who were at the shul where they weren't keeping Shabbos properly, we don't know if any of them were moved and inspired by Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman's appeal, but there is someone whom we know was moved and inspired by that appeal. Rebbetzin Shane, the author's daughter. Right. She certainly was inspired, and through her, now, how many thousands of people who have read her book were also inspired by the courage of Rabbi Herman's example. So the tochacha may not have helped the people whom it was directed towards. It may not have helped even the person who was giving it per se, although we know that it obviously did, but look what had happened in the end for all of those people who were observing, either directly or through the author's eyes, and how inspirational it was for them to see the courage that Rabbi Herman displayed in the face of adversity and opposition. And that's another dimension of tochacha, that tochacha is for the audience, for the observers. So I want to turn with that and to examine some of the classical sources that relate to the mitzvah of tochacha. And the first thing that I want to point out is really what Joe was pointing out earlier, and it's really something that needs to be pointed out at the outset of any discussion of tochacha. And I'll illustrate this by means of an interesting Terumas Hadeshen. The Terumas Hadeshen was one of the Ashkenazi people on the border between the Rishonim and the Achronim. There's disputes amongst historians about whether he ought to be classified as a Rishon or whether it ought to be classified as an Achron, but he certainly is one of the most authoritative Ashkenazi halachic Sfarim. Pretty much every single thing that he writes is quoted somewhere in the Beis Yosef or in the Ramah. We don't always paskin like him, but there are very few people, or Zoche, that pretty much every single thing that they wrote is quoted somewhere in the Beis Yosef and the Ramah. And so the Terumas Hadeshen was dealing with the following question. You can read it here in the second source under the heading Terumas Hadeshen. The Terumas Hadeshen is split up into two parts. One part was answers to questions that had been posed to him by other people, and the second part is answers to questions that he posed to himself. So this one is an answer to a question that he posed to himself. He made up the question in order to write the answer. Or perhaps he made up the question and then he wrote down the answer and then he recorded it. But it wasn't necessarily a question halacha lemaisa, it was a question that he asked himself because he wanted to clarify. And the question was, Talmid, a student, haroe es rabo shirotze leachol davar ha'asor midrabanon. He sees his Rebbe, and the Rebbe is about to pick up and eat something that is asur midrabanan, that's rabbinically forbidden.
And the Rebbe knows that? This, he said, this is part I don't understand. The Rebbe knows that?
The Talmud doesn't know what the Rebbe knows.
That's right.
All he sees is that in his head, this thing is asur midrabanan, and he sees that his Rebbe's about to eat it. Let me give you a mashal. I know somebody who one time called me after the fact to ask this question. They should have called me before the fact, that their mother had cooked fish in a, I forget whether it was a milchik oven or a fleishik oven. I don't know, most people don't have separate parv ovens for fish. Probably it was a fleishik oven, maybe it was even together with meat in the oven, but one of the pots were covered, whatever it was. And then this person basically told her mother, you have to throw the fish out. So the mother threw out the fish. And then afterwards they called me and said, you know, did I do the right thing that I told her that she should throw out the fish? So the answer is no. There's no problem, especially if one of the pots is covered. But even if it's not covered, there's no problem with eating fish that was cooked in an oven together with meat. So a person who sees that their Rebbe is about to eat that fish, so like if it seems to them like it's asur, so what should they do? Now it could be that they see that the Rebbe is doing something which is more famous as being asur. Chicken with milk, according to many opinions, is only midrabanan. So what if they see that the Rebbe is eating chicken with milk? Or what happens if they see that their Rebbe is about to ask a guy to do a malacha on Shabbos? That's an iser midrabanan. Amira l'nachri is shvus. So are they supposed to stop the Rebbe? The Rebbe is about to call a guy off the street to do a malacha on Shabbos. Should they stop him? Should they not stop him? The Rebbe is about to eat something which is demai, something which is needs to have meiser taken off of it, but only midrabanan. So should they stop the Rebbe and say, Rebbe, do you know that this is demai? Or should they say, no, I'm going to wait.
The best thing is to just ask the Rebbe, is it okay something for me to do it too?
That's
why you ask a question, because you see something, it's a lot of your curiosity. Don't tell him outright, don't have to do it. But then he'll tell you, normally you shouldn't, but there are certain circumstances, and he'll explain to him. Because then you know the background, and you know if it's allowed or not.
It's more introduction by keep it up.
You have to be diplomatic. To
right,
you
so.
You have to chew in a hypothetical question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just to raise the topic, give it a chance to be aired so that he, you know, maybe needs a prompt to think about it, maybe he might have good reasons for doing things the way that he's doing things, but just to raise it to, like, have it come up so that it would be in the surface, you know?
Right. So I think that what all three of you are saying really fits together. The way that this comes together in my mind is the following, that something is a tochacha, it is a rebuke, even if it's not phrased in an aggressive or confrontational manner. Sometimes you can have the most mild comment, and it still is a rebuke. And it's the best type of rebuke when it's mild, usually, but it still is rebuke. And so therefore, the question that the Trumas Hadeshin is posing will be applicable even in your circumstance. Meaning to say, Rebbe, may I do this too, is also a form of rebuke. And the question is it appropriate for a Talmud to rebuke his Rebbe? So the Trumas Hadeshin is coming because there are two Gemaras that both seem to indicate that a Talmud, at least when all that's at stake is an Isser D'Rabbanon, is not supposed to rebuke his Rebbe. And he's supposed to wait until his Rebbe does what his Rebbe does, and then afterwards say, Rebbe, can you explain to me what you did? But not beforehand. Because that's considered disrespectful of the Rebbe. When it's an Isser D'Oraisa, so then the situation is different, because the stakes are so much higher. When it's an Isser D'Rabbanon, so the stakes are a little bit lower. I don't have time to explain right now why exactly that's so, and therefore the Talmud is not supposed to rebuke the Rebbe. So the Trumas Hadeshin gives three different answers. I only quoted one of them over here. One of the answers that the Trumas Hadeshin says, and this is an answer which is paskin like the Shach, it's the one which I don't quote, is that a Talmud is always supposed to give tochacha to his Rebbe, unless he can be confident that his Rebbe is a miracle worker, and that therefore Hashem would not allow the Rebbe to accidentally do an Isser. So if he knows that the Rebbe is zocha to this type of miracle, that Hashem would never let them transgress an Isser, or at least this particular Isser, then the Talmud can keep quiet. But absent that assurance, If the Talmud does not know that his Rebbe is deserving of such miracles, say the Trumas Hadeshen and the Shach Paskins this way, the Talmud is always supposed to question the Rebbe's actions beforehand. However, this is not the psak of the Ramah. The Ramah Paskins against the Shach, the Ramah was earlier than the Shach, like the second answer of the Trumas Hadeshen. And that answer of the Trumas Hadeshen is no. When it's only an Isser Dirabanon, the Talmud is supposed to doubt himself. Just like the person in the story that I mentioned should have asked themselves, really, am I really, really certain that fish that was cooked with meat is something that must be thrown out? And if they had asked themselves the question and answered honestly, then they would have said that I'm not really certain of it. I don't really know what's going on here. And so it could be that there is no Isser. And the same thing is true in the case of that the Gemara mentions about the Talmid who saw his Rebbe begin to ask a guy to do a malach on Shabbos. It was the Tzorech Mitzvah, was for Bris Milah. And under those circumstances, Amira Lenachwi, for the purpose of Bris Milah, is permitted. The Talmid didn't realize that. And so he was about to go ahead and rebuke his Rebbe, but one of his friends stopped him. It's the Gemara in Irvin Samach Zayin Amud Beis. One of his friends stopped him, and in the end, it turned out that the Rebbe knew what he was doing. The Gemara that talks about the Rebbe. Precisely.
I've given some credit.
Yeah, indeed. Now, so this relates to, again, the point that Joe raised earlier, that there are some people who are so confident about their own knowledge that they just, it's inconceivable to them that someone could know better than them. It must be that the person just forgot. And there are other people who are more humble. They understand the limits, the finitude of their own erudition, of their own bikios, and so they're more inclined to understand that maybe this person knows more than them. What the Trumas Hadeshen is telling us, what the Ramah is paskening, is that even if you belong to the first category of people, even if you belong to that group of people who are incredibly self-confident, when faced with the Rebbe doing something which appears to you to be usur, one has to work on breaking their self-confidence. And that's what the Trumas Hadeshen writes. The last line here, v'yachshov v'yomar, he should think and he should say, ula yeshlo teirutz v'yishov al kushyaso. Perhaps the Rebbe has an answer. The Rebbe has a way to resolve my question on his conduct. Therefore, v'lo yikanes b'maasei rabo, I shouldn't get involved in what my Rebbe is doing. He probably, I should say to myself, he probably has an answer. Yes.
My Rebbe likes to soften it by saying clarifying reality. If you're making a point of what the reality is, then it's not a rebuke, and you can get an answer. Second of all, and more important, wouldn't the Rebbe want to know from his Talmud? I'm looking from the Rebbe's standpoint. Wouldn't the Rebbe want to know that he might be doing something wrong and either answer it or correct it? I mean, we're talking about a person who wants to grow, not talking about a person who gets insulted by somebody suggesting that perhaps he's doing something wrong.
Yes, I'll tell you. If you're talking about a Rebbe like me, absolutely people should rebuke no matter what. But if you're talking about a Rebbe like my Rebbe, he thinks about everything before he does it. And it's kemat impossible for me to imagine that he would do something like just without being aware of it. And that's part of the humility that a Talmud needs to have when he has a Rebbe of that stature, is that he really has to be second-guessing every single thing that he knows in light of his Rebbe's conduct. Because
if you don't question it, he's not your Rebbe, because he's not teaching.
But here the Trumas Hadeshen says afterwards you can ask him what his rationale is, but the assumption should be that he's doing what's right, that it's being done with forethought, and then you just want to understand it, so wait until afterwards. If you ask him before, it looks like rebuke, and therefore it's a little bit disrespectful. But if you ask him afterwards, then it's good.
Well, he might give him a patch.
Who, the Rebbe?
Rebbe might give the student a
patch.
Why?
Being so chutzpahdik.
But if you wait till afterwards, so then it shows that I trust you and you know what you're doing, and now I just, you want to understand. Lo mora nitzarich.
It's not a
after meaning a while after, as opposed to before meaning right after it's being done or after it's being done.
I think once it's done, the Talmud has shown that he trusts the Rabbi's decision making. He trusts the Rabbi's knowledge. And then right afterwards, he can say, you know, Rabbi, can you explain it to me? At that point already, there's no disrespect because he showed that he was willing, he was humble.
Sometimes a while later, but then immediately after, then, in a way, again, it may still be questioning, you know. If one waits a day or two later, a week later, then it's a different. It seems that generally tocha is generally given right after. If somebody happens to see somebody in the act, beforehand, you don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. The Shalah HaKadosh in his introduction differentiates between Musar and Tochacha. He says one of them is before the act, one of them is after the act. I don't remember which one is which. But I think what you're saying is definitely correct, that a person has to do it in a way that takes away any disrespect. However, once it's after the fact, there will be some cases where it can be done respectfully. Before the fact, it'll almost never be able to be done respectfully. Afterwards, sometimes yes, and sometimes you may have to wait a little bit longer. And again, if the person says, Rabbi, how could you do this? That's incredibly disrespectful. But if a person says, wow, you know, the Rabbi, you know, has such tremendous bekiyos, and like it must be from one of the sections of Shulchan Aruch that I haven't learned yet, you know, and can you just explain to me, you know, where this is, because I want to learn those halachos. The Rabbi inspired me to learn those halachos, so that might be a more respectful way to do it, and that may work even right afterwards.
If you're waiting till after the fact, you may as well ask the third party.
But you have a chance to ask your Rabbi. That's part of what being a Talmud is that you want most of your knowledge to come from your Rabbi. A third party, and maybe there can be difficulties with asking a third party. But I think in general, like if I had a chance of asking a question to my Rabbi, asking a question to a third party, especially about my Rabbi's own conduct, so then I would for sure take that opportunity to ask my Rabbi. Yes. So with that in mind, that humility is very, very appropriate, certainly when it's from a Talmud to a Rabbi, but even in ordinary circumstances, that a person has to ask themselves, am I certain that the person whom I'm about to rebuke is actually doing an Avera? So with that, we can go on to some of the other details. There are four Ma'amari Chazal that are the primary sources for discussing rebuke, and there seems to be a contradiction between them. We'll go through them one by one. I don't think I'm going to read all of them inside, but I will paraphrase them. The first one is a discussion called Ad Heichon Tochacha. Until when is a person obligated to give rebuke to somebody else? And the Gemara brings down three opinions. It's a machlokas, how we paskin. One opinion says that you have to keep on rebuking him until he hits you. If he's hit you, so then you don't have to rebuke him anymore. But until then, you got to keep on bothering him and bothering him. And there still is a mitzvah. That's what we learn out from the pasuk. Hocheach once, tochiach even 100 times. So, that's one opinion. Second opinion says, ad klala, you don't have to wait until they hit you, but you have to wait till they curse you. I guess that comes earlier.
How about both at the same time?
And the third opinion says, ad nizifa. Nizifa is sort of a stonewalling. He gives you just the cold shoulder. So once he gives you the cold shoulder, even if he hasn't cursed or hit, so you can stop giving him tochacha. But as long as he still is reacting, it means that you're still making an impact on him and you still have to give him tochacha. So these are three opinions in the Gemara, which seem to indicate that even beyond the point when it's certain that he won't listen to you, there still is an obligation to give tochacha.
So it's up until he does an avera. Up until you induce him. If he hits you, he's done an avera. If he does a klala on you, he's done. I assume it's, I don't know what avera is, but it sounds like an avera to me. So it's, you do it until you make him do an avera.
Question.
Maybe ad velo ad bechlal. That's what you have to say. I think that some Rishonim say this actually. It's ad velo ad bechlal. Meaning that when you see that he's about that the next time he'll hit you, then you stop. Yes.
No, that's it. If I could ask or answer Rav Nachum's question, Rishus from the Rebbe. Mm-hmm. So the person's rebuking him, and we're face to face, and what I think we're saying is when you see that person wind up, you run away. You don't wait for him to hit him. You run away. And then you were Mekayim, the mitzvah tochayim tochayim. You see him winding up. You know he's going to slum you. You run away before it happens.
That
I think
is the yeah. Get the smartphone
and
video.
I'll tell you something amazing. Yeah. The Medrash Tanhuma talks about Tochacha, and it says, look at the example of the Nevi'im. Look at the example of the prophets. So they gave Tochacha till the last minute, and they were caught. And like, for instance, Yirmiyahu HaNavi was thrown into prison for the Tochacha that he was giving to Klal Yisrael. And the Tanhuma seems to indicate that under some circumstances, there is a mitzvah of Tochacha even to that point. Even to the point where you stand there and give Tochacha while the people are hitting you, and even to the point where they throw you into prison. So Rav Yaffin, from the Mir, who wrote the famous thick footnotes on the Ritva, on Meseches Yevamos, so he makes the following question. He says, how do we resolve that with our Gemara? This seems that the most stringent opinion says ad hakah. So where do you see that you've got to sit there and let the person slap you repeatedly and even throw you into jail? So he makes a very interesting suggestion. He says it could be that when a person is a leader of a community, like the Nevi'im were, if a person really has a wider influence, they are a more towering figure, so then they have a bigger obligation of Tochacha. And then they may have to even tolerate more. This Gemara is talking about Tochacha for ordinary people. But for the leaders of the Jewish community, the mitzvah of Tochacha goes even further. It's like the Nevi'im where they have to let themselves be slapped repeatedly just in order to get in another word and another word of Tochacha, and even go to prison for
is
it.
Is there perhaps another dimension? Nevi'im were given a tzivu by Hashem to deliver the Tochacha.
They're using Hashem's language.
That goes beyond.
But if that were the case, then the Tanhuma shouldn't have used the Nevi'im as an example. Medrash Tanhuma says...
I'm not arguing with that. I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah. So I think somebody says that the Nevi'im were just fulfilling the mitzvahs Tochacha, meaning there were some things where God said to them, go and tell the Jews the following, but there were other things where they were certainly inspired, but they just were fulfilling the mitzvah of Tochacha, and that was recorded as well. Or certainly the repetition of the message, may have been because of Tochacha. Once they said it once, they already satisfied their obligation.
The Rebbe, you're talking about very, very special people. Extremely special people. And how can we compare ourselves to these people by Ruach HaKodesh? I mean, it's like above and beyond. I mean, they're such special people.
Yeah, the leaders of each generation, so even though they're very much aware of the gap between their own stature and those of the Nevi'im, but nonetheless, in as much as they are the leaders of their generation, the way that the Nevi'im were leaders of their generation, they share certain responsibilities. And even if the shoes seem too big to fill, somebody's got to at least do their best to fill the shoes. And so a person can say, I know that I'm not Yirmiyahu HaNavi, but I've got to do my best to help the people in my generation. And if that means, you know, trying to imitate Yirmiyahu, even though I don't have the same stature, then that's what I'll try to do.
I'm looking around, it's a quiet morning, and the leaders of the generation did not show up this morning. So for us little guys, who really can't be Muslim,
Let me tell you two stories. The one story is that in Europe, in one of the yeshivas in Europe, there was a bacher who gave a clap after Mincha Shmon Esrei and said, no tachnon today. He thought that there was no tachnon. And the mashkiach immediately got up and said to this bacher in public, he said, Mazel tov to all the Bnei Yeshiva. We have a new Rosh Yeshiva now, and please come walk up and sit on the Mizrach wall. This was in Europe. There was a similar story in Yerushalayim in Kol Taira with Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, that it was after Shemoneh Esrei, after Chazaras HaShas for Mincha, and a bacher gave a clap on the bima and said, "No tachnon today." And Rav Shlomo Zalman was standing next to the Shliach Tzibur, said to the Shliach Tzibur, "Say Kaddish." So somebody asked him afterwards and said, "What's pshat? We're supposed to say tachnon today." So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, "Skipping tachnon is only a violation of a drabbanon or of a minog, but embarrassing a person is a violation of a diraisa. So the diraisa is docha the drabbanon." The same exact circumstances led to two.
That actually happened. Very nice. Yeah, that actually happened. Well, the other happened also. Yeah, because maybe the reason, maybe in you, but somebody's aware, you don't want to. You don't want to embarrass. Yeah, the Rav Shlomo Zalman said he didn't want to. So I mean, there's sometimes when there's different minhagim, some places have a minhag yes to say tachnon, other places have a minhag not to say tachnon.
I just had that on Erev Tu B'Av. A lot of places have a minhag not to say tachnon, but Rav Herschel Schachter holds that you're supposed to say tachnon. I davened at a minhag with Rabbi Schachter at a minhag, Rabbi Schachter and Rabbi Goldwich. And Rabbi Goldwich was davening for the Amud, and as soon as he finished, Rabbi Schachter immediately sat down and started saying tachnon. Rabbi Goldwich wasn't sure what to do, and he hesitated for a moment or two, and then he sat down and started saying tachnon also. The before Tu B'Av, yeah, the, an Erev Tu B'Av. So it depends very much on the details of the situation, meaning nowadays people are so much more sensitive, and therefore it's much, much more difficult to deliver an effective tochacha, and we'll see in a moment how, you know, whether there's any, you know, mitzvah of tochacha under those circumstances or whether there isn't.
It was Rabbi Schechter's minhag, or it was a Shul's minhag?
Rabbi Schechter had it from Rabbi Salavitchik that this was the minhag ha-yeshiva, and whether it was a minhag of Balazin, or whether it was a minhag ha-gra, or they probably are one and the same. Basically, the minhag in yeshiva, yeshiva's Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, is to say tachnon pretty much on any day when there is even the slightest possibility that you can say tachnon. The only days that they don't is like when it's absolutely like black on white, no doubt about it, no tachnon days, but whatever.
Because they're mitnagdim, Hasidim would never say tachnon.
Oh, wow!
We have no
reason
not to say.
Shibboleth.
Yeah. Okay, so just moving onwards, we'll consolidate a little bit. So we have this source in Chazal, which seems to indicate that one is supposed to give tochacha even after it's not going to help, even when you know that the person will not accept it and will not change his ways, but you're still supposed to give tochacha. And there's a similar source in Chazal, that's the last source on the page, where the Gemara tells us that Yerushalayim was destroyed, both the unrighteous in Yerushalayim and the righteous people in Yerushalayim, even though the tzaddikim were originally destined for salvation, but in the end, that was reversed. The destiny was reversed because of the following claim. Hashem said that they shouldn't be punished because they couldn't have done anything about it. And the Midas Hadin said to Hashem, "You, Hashem, know that they couldn't have done anything about it, but they had to wonder, maybe if I say something, it'll help. Really, it would not have helped. But how could they have known that it wouldn't have helped?" And that's the last line, "Im lefanecha galoy," says the Midas Hadin to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you, Hashem, know that it's not going to help, but lahem mi galoy, is it clear to them? How do they know that their rebuke is not going to help? So this also would seem to indicate, and possibly for a different reason, that you're always supposed to give tochacha because you can never be confident, like you were saying before, you can never be confident that it won't work. Maybe it will work. So that's these two sources in Chazal. However, there are two conflicting or seemingly contradictory sources. And those are the second to last source on the first page, where the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, "Al tochach leitz pen yisna eka. Do not give rebuke to a late, to a scoffer, to a person who makes fun of all good things, because maybe he'll hate you. And from there, the Gemara concludes that kishem shemitzvah al adam lomar davar hanishma. Just like it's a mitzvah for a person to say something that will be accepted, that will be internalized, kach mitzvah al adam shelo lomar davar she'enu nishma. Similarly, there's a mitzvah for a person not to say something which will not be internalized. I have to tell you the most amazing story about this. I heard this from Professor Gerald August, Aleph HaShalom, who for many years taught public speaking in Yeshiva University. And he grew up in a town in Delaware, and the town in Delaware had an Orthodox shul and a conservative shul.
Wilmington, Delaware?
Mm-hmm. Wilmington, Delaware, yes.
A friend of mine was a rabbi of the Orthodox for many years. Mm-hmm. He's gone now. Lenny Gewirtz.
Is that related to the Gewirtzes in Muncie?
Yeah, sure. I think they're all related. I think all the
Jewish
related. So he heard the story from the rabbi of the Reform shul there. The rabbi, of the conservative shul. The rabbi said that when his father passed away, it was in a different city, not in Wilmington, Delaware, and he said that when he went to the undertaker to take care of the funeral arrangements, he felt like he was not being treated respectfully. He felt like he was being treated just like a piece of white bread. That's how he sort of felt. It's just, you know, one piece of white bread from a whole bag, and that's how he was being treated. And that Kol Nidre night, when he had the biggest attendance of the year in shul, he got up and he related his experiences and how the undertaker treated him. And he said, "You should know that when I was dealing with this undertaker, I felt like I was a piece of white bread." And then he's talked about the mitzvah of Kivuras Yisrael, of burying a person properly according to halacha. And he said that the undertaker here in Wilmington who gives Kivuras Yisrael is an incredibly empathic person. He will not treat you or your relatives like a piece of white bread. And he said that that year, and from then on, there was a tremendous rise in the number of people from that conservative congregation who opted to go for Kivuras Yisrael. So this rabbi shared with Professor August the following. He said he had it on his agenda for a quarter of a century to talk to his congregation about Kivuras Yisrael. But every time that he wanted to mention it, he didn't feel that he had the right words to penetrate, to get through to them, to convince them. And it was only when he had this experience himself with the undertaker who was taking care of his father that he realized, now I have the way to put it that will get through. And so he waited 25 years to say this particular message, to deliver this particular drasha, because he was waiting for the circumstances that would allow it to get through. So that's sort of what we're saying here, that as long as it's a davar she'eino nishma, silence is better. And once it becomes a davar nishma, so then it should be spoken. That's what this gemara here in Yevamo seems to be saying. And there's a parallel gemara.
Very good.
Yeah, that was so amazing. So we have the last Gemara here. It's on the second page, and the Gemara basically tells you that there were these people who were eating up until Shkia on Erev Yom Kippur, and even though that's a bittul, it's neglectful of the mitzvah d'oraisa to add on a few moments, whether it's 2 minutes or whatever, a couple of minutes extra on Yom Kippur. These people were not adding on anything. They were eating until the last second, which is neglect of a mitzvah d'oraisa, the same way that a person who doesn't build a sukkah, doesn't sit in a sukkah on Sukkot, is neglecting a mitzvah d'oraisa, or a person who misses Tekiyah Shofar and Rosh Hashanah is neglecting a mitzvah d'oraisa, and so too a person who eats until the last minute on Erev Yom Kippur is neglecting the mitzvah d'oraisa of Tosefes Yom HaKippurim. So the question that the Gemara poses is, why doesn't anybody tell them that they are neglecting this mitzvah d'oraisa? Why doesn't anybody tell them that they should stop eating a few minutes earlier? And to that the Gemara answers that they won't buy it, they won't accept it. It's not explicit in the Torah anywhere, a pasuk that says you must stop eating on Erev Yom Kippur a few minutes before sunset. It's a drasha, we infer it using the methods, the Yogim Midosh HaTorah Nidrashas Bahen, and not everybody will accept it. They'll say, yeah, really? Yeah, maybe not. So therefore, says the Gemara, Mutav Sheyihiyu Shogigin V'al Yihiyu Mizidin. Better that they should be Shogigin, that they should be unwitting Avaryanim, unwitting transgressors, rather than have us tell them that it's an Avera and have them become deliberate transgressors. Mutav Sheyihiyu Shogigin V'al Yihiyu Mizidin. So this again seems to suggest that there are times when it's preferable not to deliver a rebuke. Have you gotten the... There are times when it's preferable not to deliver a rebuke. And the question then becomes, under what circumstances is tochacha appropriate? And under what circumstances is tochacha inappropriate? So there are a number of different suggestions that are given by the Rishonim. I'm going to skip the first one for the time being. We'll go now to the third source on the second page, the Rush. And the Rush writes, Kasav Baal HaItur, the Baal HaItur writes, Dafka b'midi da'asi midrasha. Only something which is derived from a drasha, the midos shatorah nidreshes bahen. Dalet Rishin is the common root of both of those words. So only something which is derived from a drasha, that's where we say, Mutav Shiyiyu Shogigin V'al Yiyu Mizidin, Kegon Tosefes Inay Diyom HaKippurim, like adding on a little bit to the affliction of Yom Kippur. Aval B'midi D'Ksiva B'Oraisa, something which is explicit in the Torah, Behedya, explicitly, Machinan Behu V'Anshinan Lehu Ad Deparshi. We protest, we rebuke, and we even punish until they stop. So this is something which I just think is a little bit striking. The fact that the Baal HaItur mentions the words anshinon luhu, that we punish them, seems to indicate that there is a certain amount of authority, of force, that we are able to bring to bear to stop the person from doing the Avera. And nonetheless, the Baal HaItur says that when the Avera is inexplicit, when it's only Dover, which is learned out from a drasha, from a hermeneutic rule, even though we're able to bring force to bear, even though we're able to be coercive, we aren't, we shouldn't be. And he's talking about a situation where coercion is a possibility, and he nonetheless says that it's not simply a question of rebuke and saying you're doing the wrong thing. It's a question of coercing a person to do the mitzvah or to stop doing the avera or not. And he says sometimes coercion is not the answer. So that I think is very significant for other contexts. That's the opinion of the Baal HaItur. He says, you rebuke when it's something which is explicit in the Torah, and when it's not explicit in the Torah, so then you do not rebuke, at least under some circumstances. The Nimuke Yosef in Maseches Yevamos gives another two distinctions. Number one, he says, there's a difference, and these are the first few words, between a yachid and a rabbim. When you're giving rebuke to a large group of people, you have to be more, or in front of a large group of people, you have to be more cautious. When you're giving rebuke privately, just one-on-one, so then there's a little bit more room for, there's a little bit more leeway for being more loquacious, for speaking out your mind a little bit more, for being a little bit more sharp. So the Nimuke Yosef says there's a difference between giving rebuke either to an individual in public or to giving rebuke to a large group of people, as opposed to giving rebuke to an individual in private. Giving rebuke to an individual in private, there's much more leeway, there's much more room. That's when the mitzvah of tochacha is more expansive. And then Nimuke Yosef goes on and says that there may be, although there might be a difference between a case where you think that your rebuke might help them stop doing the Avera, and a case where you're certain that the rebuke will not help them, he says, Mishum de'ulai yishmu. Again, a person has to have the humility to be aware that they don't know the future. Like the Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos, Lifneim Migaloi. Do the tzaddikim really know that the rebuke won't make an impact? Maybe the rebuke will make an impact. Every person who's saying, well, I'm not going to rebuke because it won't help, has to or should second guess himself and say, maybe this rebuke actually will be of help. Not always, absolutely.
I say shouldn't.
You should or you shouldn't?
No, you shouldn't.
You should not. The person has a right to be confident sometimes. Absolutely. Especially when you have a lot of life experience in your pocket. And the more experience a person has, usually the more of a right they have to be confident. So I'm going to just summarize here the next line, which is the Shulchan Aruch, and then I want to return to the checklist that I had on the first page. So if just first of all, summarizing the Shulchan Aruch gives the following criteria, which the Mishnah Brura subsequently qualifies and modifies. The Shulchan Aruch says that before giving tochacha, a person should ask himself five different questions. Question number one is the person who is doing the Aveira doing it deliberately, or is he doing it accidentally? Is he doing it in spite of his knowledge that this is forbidden, or is he doing it because he thinks that it's permitted? So if he's doing it in spite of knowing that it's forbidden, says the Shulchan Aruch, then there will be a mitzvah of tochacha. Question number two is, do you think that there's a possibility that it'll be effective, that it will stop them from doing this Aveira now or stop them from repeating the Aveira in the future? Says the Shulchan Aruch, if you think that there's a possibility that your rebuke is going to stop them from doing an Aveira, then even if they're accidental, you should still give them the rebuke. If there's a possibility that it's going to help them to avoid the Aveira, give the rebuke even if it's accidental. That's question number two. Question number three is it explicit in the Torah, or is it not explicit in the Torah? Again, if it's explicit in the Torah, if it's a pasuk that says "don't say lashon hara," and they're saying lashon hara, so then you give them rebuke, even if they're doing it deliberately, even if they're doing it accidentally, and even if you're positive that it's not going to help them, because when something's explicit in the Torah, say mefarshim, you can never be positive. You always have to second guess. The Torah says it. You tell them the Torah says it, so there's always a chance. You can never assume that it's impossible that the rebuke will be helpful. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says if it's something explicit in the Torah, you have to give the rebuke. Number four is, have you given them rebuke yet at all? Says the Shulchan Aruch, if you haven't said anything to them, then you have at least have to speak up once. At least speak up once. If you've already spoken up once, so then, again, if all the answer to all the other questions are no, there could be perhaps no rebuke, but if you have not even spoken up once, you should at least speak up once. And finally, the fifth question is, are you in private or are you in public? If you're in public and you already spoke up once, so then let things be. But if you're in private, you should speak up again and again until you reach a much later point in the rebuke process. So those are the five questions that the Shulchan Aruch says a person should ask himself. However, and this is a big however, the Mishnah Brura makes many, many qualifications to these ideas. And so I think that the basic principles can really be summed up. I'm back on the first page now. I'm back on the first page. The basic principles can be summed up in this third section here, factors to consider that determine the appropriateness of rebuke. First of all, like we saw in the Trumas Hadashah, a person has to ask, am I certain the person is actually doing an Aveira? Or is it something like cooking fish together with meat in the same oven, which is not really an Aveira? I have to ask myself, is it really an Aveira? If I'm certain that it's an Aveira, then I can go on to the second question. The second question is, what is the probability of this tochacha helping? Perhaps the rebuke will not help the sinner change his or her ways, or will cause them to sin even more grievously. That's what we see. Mutav sheyiyu shogegim ve'al yiyu mizidin. If you give rebuke, that's going to make their avera even worse. So sometimes, rather than make their avera worse, we don't give them rebuke. Now, he'll do it in spite of knowing that it's asr now. Now again, there's a certain sacrifice, a self-sacrifice involved in that. Because it means that my chitzonios, my actions, are going to sort of cool off my fervor, my distress, at seeing Avira. We're supposed to feel pain, we're supposed to feel distress when we see an Avira being done, and if we're silent, so then it's going to take the edge off of the distress that we experience when we witness that Avira being performed again. However, for the good of the chote, for the good of the person doing the Avira, in order not to make them amazed, sometimes it's appropriate to be silent. And that's like somebody mentioned this earlier, that that if the person is going to do an Avera like cursing you or hitting you, then you should stop giving them rebuke. At least if you're not a leader of the generation, maybe you should stop before that point, right before that point, in order that you shouldn't cause them to transgress. That's one of the qualifications that the Mishnah Berurah mentions all the way at the end. He says if rebuking them will cause them to be sone, to hate you, and to be no kin, to take revenge against you, so then you should not give rebuke, because that's basically going to take them from doing a lower level of Avera to doing a higher level of Avera. Not only will they be doing the Avera that they were doing, but they'll also be over the Avera of Sina, and they'll also be over the Avera of Nekama. So therefore, a person has to ask, what is the cost-benefit ratio of giving this rebuke? If the costs to me are going, the costs to the person, the subject of the rebuke, will outweigh the benefits to me of expressing my distress, so then the rebuke should not be given. And finally, the third criteria that the Mishnah Berurah mentions is perhaps the rebuke will endanger yourself or somebody else. Certainly, when the person's life or finances perhaps are going to be in danger by giving the rebuke, there are grounds for not giving it. Again, each of these questions is a judgment call for the situation that's in front of the person. Some of the principles that we've analyzed, the question is it derais or derabanan, is it explicit, is it not explicit, is it in public, is it in private, those are going to help us, those are directives that Chazal give us to help us weigh, because we're not Nevi'im, we don't know what the future will be, but if it's a deoraisa, if it's in private, so then we ought to assume that it's more likely that the benefits will outweigh the costs. If it's only a drabbanon, or if it's only something which is implicit through a drasha, and it's in public, so then we're going to be more likely to worry that maybe the costs will outweigh the benefits. So the basic principle is that every time that a person is giving rebuke, there's a cost-benefit analysis. What will the benefits be for the subject of the rebuke? What will the benefits be for me? What will the benefits be for the audience? As against, what will the negatives, what will the costs be for the subject of the rebuke? Will it cause them to do more averos? What will the costs be for myself? Will I suffer personal harm through giving this rebuke? But under some circumstances, when what's at stake is much higher, so then we are supposed to assume that it's more likely that the benefits will outweigh the costs. But when the stakes are a little bit lower, so then we are permitted, or perhaps even obligated, to assume that the costs will outweigh the benefits. Wishing everyone a wonderful day. Yeah.